Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, February 17th, 2017. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Be that as it may, in the Trump era, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to go back over the week that seems like a year. Maybe also on the program, someone else, depending on if she gets out of the doctor's office in time. We'll see. In the streets of New York.
Mindy?
No. Also on the program today, EPA nominee Scott Pruitt ordered to release damning emails, or potentially damning emails, I should say, from oil and gas executives and Republicans to make sure he'll end up releasing them after confirming him to run the EPA. Donald Trump's NSA shit sandwich job rejected. Jared Kushner visits and scolds CNN. Donald Trump is insane, but that's probably why Republicans still love him. And credit where credit's due, Donald Trump fulfills his campaign promise to ensure that coal sludge can continue to enter our streams and riverways. Meanwhile, Trump's new labor pick to be just as horrible for workers as his last one, but has probably not beaten his ex-wife. And Bridgegate against Chris Christie can proceed in a state court in New Jersey. In the meantime, he'll have the meatloaf. And
no, for real, he will have the meatloaf.
Sadly, Boeing workers in South Carolina vote against unionizing. Hope that works out for them. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Cliff Schechter and I will probably go through much of, or at least parts of the highlights of Donald Trump's presser yesterday. He's insane. Folks, I mean, there's, you know, I don't know what to really say beyond that. It was, I think, really clear to everyone who witnessed that, that he's insane. There are, I think, a significant portion of the American public who don't seem to care, or perhaps we're dealing with some type of mass insanity. But the way he was responding is not the way someone who is in control of his faculties responds. I mean, and really,
that is a very in control of your faculties way of putting it.
I mean, I don't know how else to relate this. And increasingly, I think what the media has to do is look to those who are enabling him, at least in the context of our government. I mean, the idea that Mitch McConnell can continue to offer a sort of rolling rationale or justification for his behavior is, I mean, I think, you know, McConnell and Ryan have to be held to account. I mean, let's go over this. February 8th, McConnell in the New York Times. I think there's a high level of satisfaction with the new administration. Our members are not obsessed with the daily tweets, but are looking at the results. I choose on February 15th to focus on what he's doing because I think that's exactly what this country needs. He said that in the Wall Street Journal. Yesterday, in the Washington Post, I think we know enough now to know that Donald Trump is doing the same kinds of things that Jeb Bush would have done or Marco Rubio would have done or Mitt Romney would have done. And I think, look, there's some truth there. There's definitely some truth there because I think these Republican presidents would have taken very similar steps. I think I don't know if they would have nominated at the same level of incompetence in some instances, but a guy like Scott Pruitt, that seems to be a Ted Cruz pick through and through. And I will reiterate what I said, I don't know, 8 months ago. He will be both a rubber stamp and a loose cannon. And I think that's exactly what he is. He is rubber stamping all of the worst and most noxious right-wing policies and personnel picks. Yet, at the same time, he's having his golfing buddies who pay $500,000 to join his country club that he still operates. As a little bonus, they get a picture with the guy who holds the nuclear football. I mean,
great guy.
At one point, the Republican Party, which is enabling this, much to their own ideological benefit, in a very calculated and deliberate way, must be held to account. So it is not going to be enough for the press to go, and I have to say, the press did perfectly fine job at this presser.
It's sort of like, you know, it's like playing chess with a monkey. You can make all the right moves, but when he starts pooping on the thing, it really, yeah, he lost. He lost.
But so what? Because there's a Republican Party that is there to see the monkey poop. And so at one point, the press is going to have to hold the Republican Party responsible for their president, because they are the only ones who can act upon this. They're the only ones who can investigate. They're the only ones who can impeach. They're the only ones who have leverage. And so they must be held to account. I mean, honestly, like, you know, they're in the position of responsibility here. When the kid is out of control, you turn to the next person who has the most responsibility for that kid. And in this case, it is Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. And the press, I hope soon, because the longer they wait, the longer they pretend that Donald Trump is not being propped up by the Republicans in Congress, the more damage, I mean, God knows, honestly, like, you know, I don't know, maybe we're going to be going on vacation next week. And so we're doing some pre-tapes this week. And one of the interviews I'm going to be doing is with the CIA agent who was the primary interrogator of Saddam Hussein. I don't think he's been in the CIA since 2011. Although, you know, I don't know if these guys ever leave.
But one of the questions I want to ask him is, like, does anybody in the CIA know how to disconnect that button in that nuclear football? Also, one other note. Did I mention on this program that I had talked to Malcolm Nance? I know I did when I had run into him at MSNBC. But did I mention that what he told me about the private security force? You know, there was a story a couple of weeks ago that that Donald Trump was not going to disband his private security force. Armed private security force when he became president. And I had asked Malcolm Nance about that. Not that he would necessarily have any, I don't know what kind of insight he would have to what the Secret Service does, as, you know, being a former or, I don't know, concurrent spy. But he said, well, the head of the Secret Service, I mean, they don't mess around, because he said when I was in Iraq that not I in Iraq, but when Malcolm was in Iraq, he said when they ran into the Secret Service, they stood down immediately. Secret Service took over. And he said, they will demand that none of these people carry guns. And I said, well, what if the president says, no, they're going to carry guns? Like, what is the leverage? He said the head of the Secret Service would go to them. And I said, what's the leverage the head of the Secret Service has? I mean, what is the recourse? And he goes, well, I mean, there is none. I mean, I guess he would resign. So the head of the Secret Service announces retirement, I think it was yesterday or the day before. Not for nothing. So let me just just play this for a moment. We gather.
If you can't work with Bo Dietl, I don't want you running the Secret Service, okay?
We've just got to. This is music I play when people are having panic attacks. So. A prince on the bridge of a castle. There you go. So it's all right. Everybody back? All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter, and we will go through some of the highlights of the Trump presser. I don't know. I've come back around to laughing because
what else are you going to do?
Right. I mean, who's going to listen to a podcast full of weeping for 2 hours?
I'm just so afraid. The Secret Service is gone.
Oh, come on. Well, they're definitely not organized enough to do what we were afraid of them doing.
Well, that's the only upside.
That's the only upside.
Besides that, we're all gonna die. Very healthy amount of incompetence, which looking better all the time.
Why don't we have the concentration camps? Steve, what the hell?
All right, we'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Casual Friday, and even in this era of the Mad King, some things are our touchstones. Some things let us know that at the end of the day, everything is okay. This song is one such touchstone.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schachter. Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well in our new and kind of dystopic reality. Hanging in there.
Yes. It's weird. It's pretty weird.
It is.
And
weird is one way of putting it. Embarrassing. I think it really is embarrassing. It's like your lunatic uncle gets up and starts making a speech, you know, at Thanksgiving or whatever party you're having, and nobody has the courage to tell them to sit down and shut up.
Mm.
And it's kind of like the rest of the world is watching all this stuff.
You know, there was a great, I mean, and I think this is going on around the world, frankly. There was a headline, I think, in, I don't know what Canadian paper was. Maybe it was the National Journal. The headline, if I remember correctly, was... the press will say I am ranting and raving, rants Donald Trump.
That's so perfect. He claimed he wasn't ranting and raving, that he was really happy.
Right.
If that's him happy.
You know, well, I got to say, he did seem, in this press conference, as energetic as I've seen him. But before, I want to...
energetic and happy are two different things.
Well, but I mean, I think he seemed... as I think, like, this is, you know, this is his element. He may be very excited to go down to Florida. Maybe he also wanted to show Sean Spicer how you do it. Like,
maybe, but I mean, again,
they call me crazy. I'll show you crazy.
But he was insane.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, energy is only part of the deal.
Well,
you bring some other things to the table, like sanity.
Before we go through some of the highlights of this press conference, because I think this is...
it's an all-time high.
But before we go through that, you wanted to just mention the passing of a...
Well, I think it's relevant, you know, which is at the age, I think it's 93, Bob Michael just passed. And a lot of people forget, you know, at this point, who he was and what he represented. But he was the Republican in the Republican House caucus for 38 years, and for most of that time, maybe all that time, he was in leadership. A Republican from Illinois, a moderate Republican who worked with Democrats and passed things, and everybody liked, and you know, used to take the station wagon with Dan Rostenkowski, a Democrat, to drive from Illinois to Washington. I mean, look, I know a lot of these things have changed and what have you, but the thing that's important about him is, and why his passing is so important, almost like a message for us to remember what used to be, is that, you know, most people who sort of watch these things and have been for years, Norm Ornstein comes to mind, who's been one of Trump's maybe harshest critics and isn't liberal by any stretch of the imagination, is probably calls himself sort of center-right. You know, they see, and I think you can, if you study this stuff, it's very evident that the changeover from Michael to Newt Gingrich as a Republican leader was as important as the election of Reagan or the election of George W. Bush. It was one of those, if you trace the sort of four or five big moments of conservatism over the last 50 years, I would say, on the national stage, it's one of them. Because you went from this guy who tried to work with the other party, tried to get things done, you know, was not perfect. I'm not lionizing him as amazing. He blocked a lot of Clinton's agenda early on in 93. But just somebody who basically, you know, and I think some of that was due to pressure from Gingrich and Dick Armey and Tom DeLay and sort of the then young bucks coming up who were troublemakers. But the point is that he's representative of a different time in Washington when the parties worked together. And I would say during a golden era of the sort of 50s through the 80s, or, you know, or even earlier, when both parties differed on many things, whatever, but there was a consensus of trying to move in a leftward direction on economics, of trying to also on civil rights and trying to help people and move forward. And there was a real GOP wing and people in leadership representing that wing that were part of it. And he was everything that Gingrich wasn't, including, felon and, or not felon, was he a misdemeanor, whatever the GOP PAC thing was that Gingrich was convicted of, and the scumminess of Gingrich and the going to impeach Clinton while he's having his own affair,
right,
and all the things that the Republican Party has become that represented by Newt Gingrich, which is why it made perfect sense that Gingrich, who's one of the original con men in the Republican Party, was so supportive of Trump. That's everything that Bob Michael didn't represent.
But, I mean, that may be the case with Bob Michaels, but I don't know. It's something, I mean, I seem to just, you mentioned Norm Orenstein, and I'm trying to remember, he used to be a regular on Al Franken's show during the Bush years. And yeah. I remember listening with some frustration that people like that the Republican, the so-called moderate Republicans, the people who would play within the norms, let's say, were not properly, I think, attuned to, conscious of, or were willfully ignorant of what was going on even then. And certainly, and probably, and I wasn't, intimately aware of the dynamics as I have been over the past 10, 15 years. But Donald Trump didn't come out of nowhere.
And I think that's a great point. Let you finish and all.
Because Andrew Sullivan's writing these pieces and David Frum, and David Frum, he's the one who came up with the axis of evil. And when you start to, introduce these things into the bloodstream, they sometimes metastasize. And so, the reason, I mean, look, 84%, I wasn't going to get to this quite yet, but let's do this. Donald Trump's approval rating is at 39% of American public. 39%. Yep. There
Which
has
is
never
frankly,
been
higher than it should be.
There has never been a president who has had this low of an approval rating this early, at least since they've been taking these over the past like 6-7 presidents. The amount of people who feel very strongly about this is like 49%. So half of those people feel very, very strongly that they disapprove of what he's doing.
But 26% who approve, I think it's 26%, strongly approve of him.
Yes. 84.
That's that 26%. I've always picked out that number. That was like where George W. Bush ended
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
26% of people that will support any crazy right-wing thing that happens.
84% of Republicans approve of the job Trump is doing. 84%.
Right. Well, but that is self-selected at this point. Sadly, a lot of these working class, once Democrats, I mean, you can find them in parts of upstate New York, and you can find them in Long Island and some of the outer boroughs, just the way you can find them here in Ohio in the Appalachian part and some of our exurbs here, are Republicans now. And the party has appealed to their most base racist, sexist, homophobic instincts. And drawn it out of them, quite frankly. I'm not saying that they're not responsible for their actions and their beliefs, but propaganda exists for a reason.
Well, yes.
I mean, Fox News and Rush Limbaugh and all that has had an effect. It has convinced people of things. So here's what I would say to what you were saying before.
But wait, let me just finish this point.
Okay,
who takes responsibility? I mean, these Republican leaders, where have they been over the past 20-some-odd years while their party got to the point where 84% of them would approve of this lunatic after 4 weeks? I mean, look, during the campaign, when Donald Trump announced, I said, if I was a Republican, I would definitely support Donald Trump. And that's a function of the Republican Party going off the rails. And it seems to me that is a responsibility of the David Frums, of the Andrew Sullivans, even regardless of when they saw the light and realized things had gotten off the rails. Frum was pretty late in the game.
My response to that would be, you're entirely right. I'm glad to have voices of reason out there. I mean, you got someone like Evan McMullen was one of them, but he was in the House Republican Caucus as a staffer when they were doing a lot of these crazy things. You know, just the way Fromm was creating the Axis of Evil and some of these other guys, you know, like Ornstein. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think some of them have accepted some of the culpability for that. But I think it's sort of the proverbial sort of frog boiling in the pot, which is, when do you say, you know, if your beliefs are center-right beliefs and there's legislation and things being passed that you support, at what point do you say, well, this right wing is so crazy that they're not just sort of an element of our party, but they are taking over our party? When do you know to, was it obvious to them when Gingrich took over the House caucus and, yes, did some crazy things, but there's also, obviously, impeachment being the biggest of all, but there was some responsible legislating still going on at that point. You know, it's happened in phases, and I'm not letting any of them off the hook. Just let me be clear. I'm just saying, I do understand, however, how someone was, first of all, but Michael was of an earlier generation in a serious way than someone like David Fromm. I mean, he left the House after that, and I don't think we've heard from him in like 25 years politically. Maybe you could say he had a responsibility to speak up. And some of the guys who were more moderate-ish back then, you know, I don't know what to think either. You could argue it's age. I mean, when Bob Dole comes out, somebody who actually was a sort of center-right, you know, guy who was part of the system and had some and legitimately supported things like the Americans with Disabilities Act and whatever, are suddenly supporting Trump. You do have to wonder, is that age, or is he what he is, and he's gotten with the program and he's okay with it? You know, these questions are all worth asking, and these guys have lots of culpability. I'm just saying, in my mind, I'm not arguing about the ones who kind of watched it happen since. I guess you could argue that Michael was still a Republican post, right, you know, what Nixon, some of the things Nixon said and did after Watergate, which I would say sort of was that first signal that the Republican Party was headed in a autocratic direction. He was still there with Reagan. And you could argue that was the sort of second phase, if you want. I mean, I don't know. It's up to you. People could even go with McCarthyism as an earlier phase. It's all how you want to define it. But I don't think he's not somebody who stuck around for the, you know, when he was in this House still, the Republican Senate caucus still had John Chafee and still had Mark Hatfield and still had Jim Jeffords. And I mean, a lot of legitimately moderate, you know, Charles Percy, you know, Percy. I mean, a lot of legitimately sort of center to center left Republicans. We're still there. So, you know, it's hard to kind of figure. I think certainly you've seen that trend get quicker, speed up, since George W. Bush was elected. You've seen a lot of the sort of nonpartisan types break away, who broke away from Bush originally, who were more kind of moderate Republicans who didn't support him. And then it's sped up with Trump. But obviously there's enough that are still there, you know, which is even worse. So I'm not giving them clean hands. I'm just saying, in a way, it's not even to lionize Bob Michael as much as to sort of remember that there was a period in time when Washington did actually function, and where the two parties didn't just try to destroy each other. And when I say the two parties, I mean Republicans trying to destroy Democrats, because the Democrats have not done very much of that at all.
As you say all this, all I can think of is that scene at the end of the original Planet of the Apes, where Charlton Heston rides down the beach in a horse with the woman, and he's blocked in the camera frame. You can't tell what he's looking at, that he's so shocked. And it's the Statue of Liberty, the like three quarters buried under sand. And he gets down, he realizes, like,
all along,
you blew it all to hell.
That's how you blew it. Yeah. I feel like
as you take us down that memory lane of what it used to be, that's basically what we're doing. We're all just on the back of that horse with you as you, ride
down.
The second
one, remember, he went underground and he was at like the 59th Street.
Yes. Well, that's where
subway
things...
station. So I don't know. Is that accurate? What the 59th Street subway station looks like at this point?
That stuff got off the rails a little bit, but that could be. People should check out that original one just to get a sense of where we might be headed. All right,
you can watch that clip. It's very easy on the. Yes. Again, and of course, that's when Charlton Heston was a man of the left, and we know where he ended up too. So lots of these guys are clearly susceptible to losing their minds and moving to the right. And again, none of this is to sort of lionize any individual, but it's just to say there was a time when our government functioned and our institutions functioned. And in a way, it's the people of the next generation who were more moderate, like Bob Michael, as you say, who didn't seem to know when to jump off that train and sat there and watched in slow motion as one offensive thing happened after another. I mean, I certainly think it should have been, and I've said this on the show before, and then we can jump to the crazy press conference, which is the end of the movie, as you're talking about, is when you're looking at that Statue of Liberty in the sand. But the clearest sign to me, if you hadn't already seen it with the Bush years, that a Trump was coming, you know, or somebody of his variety, Ted Cruz, that the party, there was no longer a functioning, moderate, intelligent, whatever wing, was in 2010, when there were all those primaries by Tea Partiers, and the one where essentially the self-proclaimed witch in Delaware beat Mike Castle, a guy who'd been governor and was, had a huge legislative background sponsoring things like stem cell research and was a classic moderate Republican who could trace his lineage directly back to sort of Benjamin Franklin, you know what I mean? And that they threw that guy overboard for the witch. I think that was a pretty good example of an almost perfect metaphor of, here, we're going from this to that. And if that could happen in Delaware, not Alabama or Utah, it was kind of the party was over.
Yeah, let's educate people as to what we're talking about with that Charlton Heston thing. Here it is. Yeah, this is the that end scene. Actually, just skip ahead about 20 seconds, I would say, because here we go, right there. Here he is. He's riding down the horse. There's something. He stops. So that. He's wearing that loincloth.
Very sexy loincloth.
Which I know you're wearing, which you wear on casual Fridays when you get
here. I do. After I saw that it could be worn by the NRA president,
what,
I thought.
What possibly could he be looking at as he gets off the horse? Huh?
What is he?
You never noticed that? What do you mean? Michael never saw this.
Michael never saw this?
I guess not. Nobody in the office.
They only saw the Marky Mark version, probably.
Yeah.
I'm home. All the time. We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up! Oh, damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Yeah, and she's just, we're all just looking at you on the sand, and then all of a sudden we reveal. There's the Statue of Liberty. Yeah. There it is.
How is there a giant mountain next to the Statue of Liberty?
What's that?
How is there a giant mountain next to it?
Because it blew up, wondering. And it's not still attached,
because it got blown all
buddy.
To hell, dude.
Yeah,
when nuclear
holocaust, which is worse than any other holocaust, happens, you don't know where shit's going to end up.
So she just got blown off and then went riding around in
untethered.
The ocean
yeah.
and then landed there?
Correct.
Upright.
That's correct.
It kind of is cool looking, though. All right.
Or maybe it was like... And it just went, wee.
I always thought that it had been like eons, and because I haven't seen this movie, I thought it eons.
But you still have a
sediment.
Theory about
what
the
eons ago that it happened. And it happened in the movie they described earlier. Charlton Heston explains it was the 20% of uranium that Hillary got from Russia.
Right. All right.
Led to that.
Also, Cliff, how dare you accuse me of watching movies because Marky Mark is in them?
Right.
I didn't watch this movie because my dad tried to make me too many times. Okay, that's why.
Let's all right. So let's get to some of these clips of this press conference. Where I mean, I think each time for me it was that interview with David Muir at ABC where I watched that, and that was the first time I walked away going like, oh my God, he's really like. Clinically insane.
I'm troubled.
Not crazy.
I mean,
and
go ahead. Sorry.
And I think this press conference for an ever increasing circle of people is people are coming to that conclusion. And well, I suspect...
I just say, you have to ask the question at some point. I mean, seriously, all joking aside, I think it's plainly obvious at this point that he's mentally ill in some fashion and has been sort of for a while. Declare him whatever you want to declare him. Normal people don't react like that. Normal people don't still obsess over election numbers a few months ago. They don't say the things he says and they don't react the way he reacts. And, you know, Republicans, I mean, in history, if we have a history yet to write and we still exist, I mean, the culpability of these guys, your Jason Chaffetz's and Paul Ryan's and Mitch McConnell's who are watching all of this, the only people with the power at this point to make sure this person is no longer making the decisions that he gets to make, and they're just sort of standing there whistling, watching this. They should be held in such contempt by history. This is beyond partisan politics. This isn't even about Mike Pence, who we'd probably get stuck with, who I wouldn't be able to stand but would know at least was sort of semi-sane. It's ridiculous. And with that, go ahead.
All right. Well, let's see. Here is one instance where Donald Trump, despite the fact that we will hear him in a bit, make the point that he's the least racist person that any of you know. Make some assumptions about a reporter that because she's African-American, she may have contacts with other African-Americans that he needs to get in touch with. Here it is.
Are you going to include the CBC, Mr. President, in your conversations with your urban agenda, your inner city agenda, as well as...
Am I going to include
Are you going to include the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional
Well,
Hispanic
I would.
Caucus,
I tell you what. Do you want to set up the meeting? Do you want to set up the meeting?
No.
Are they friends of yours?
I'm just a reporter.
Set up the meeting.
I know some of them, but I'm sure
Let's go. Set up
right
a meeting.
Now.
I would love to meet with the Black Caucus. I think it's great, the Congressional Black Caucus. I think it's great.
Pause it. You know what else he didn't seem to know? He didn't know what the CBC was. He didn't know what the CBC was.
No, he had no idea.
He thinks it's great. Huh? It's great. That way you get them all grouped together.
April Ryan was who he told, Spicer told, met with MLK.
What's that?
Spicer said that Trump had met with.
Yeah, April Ryan's
Martin
been
Luther
getting
King
a lot of good questions in on these because she's who Sean Spicer told met with Martin Luther King. Trump met with Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, he met with MLK the Third. He's met with his black person.
Yeah, every
it's
time
transitive property. So
every time
met
April
with
Ryan
him.
From Urban Radio Networks asks a question, it's money.
She is the one that
That's
Omarosa.
Right, Michael, it's the transitive property of blacks.
Yeah. She is the
one. They all hang out.
Translative property.
She is
of
the
blacks.
One that Omarosa apparently intimidated by
Not
saying
just intimidated,
we have a dossier.
Yeah, physically,
on you.
Ava Ryan says.
Well,
she
maybe that's why.
Her.
Can someone get
they
the
have a dossier
on that
says,
on that Congressional Black Caucus woman who's always asking questions?
They have a dossier that shows that you're black. And so you obviously know the other blacks.
It's time for our black to tell that black that we know she's black.
Here is. I think this is a question actually that came just prior to the April Ryan question, and this was a question, and this guy I think was actually placed in there, a guy named Jake Turks from Ami Magazine. It is a a Hasidic magazine, I guess, Orthodox magazine. He appears to be Hasidic. And I think that they actually put him in the audience as a to provide cover, yes, for Trump. But Trump immediately sees this guy and starts to get, you can feel the defensiveness welling. Here is the question. You got to listen carefully because he starts off by saying, I know that you are not anti-Semitic and that no one in your cabinet is. Here we go.
Wait, watch how friendly he is. Go ahead.
I've been to two entire campaign, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
So, first of all, my name is Jake Turks from Ami Magazine, and despite what some of my colleagues may have been reporting, I haven't seen anybody in my community accuse either yourself or any of anyone on your staff of being anti-Semitic. We understand that you have Jewish grandchildren. You are their Zaidi. However, what we are concerned about and what we haven't really heard being addressed is an uptick in anti-Semitism and how the government is planning to take care of it. There's been a report out that 48
bomb threats have been made against Jewish centers all across the country in the last couple of weeks. There are people who are committing anti-Semitic acts or threatening to...
You see, he said he was going to ask a very simple, easy question. And it's not. It's not. Not a simple question. Not a fair question.
It's a multi-part question.
Okay, sit
question.
Down. I understand the rest of your question. Whoa. So here's the story, folks. Number one, I am the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your entire life.
Pause it for a second. I just want to make it clear that he's just told this Hasidic Jew that Donald Trump, that he is the least anti-Semitic person he's ever seen in his entire life.
More than Moshe?
Before you go back, let me make a point too, which is that even if you make a case that I am absolutely not racist, which somebody might say, and is a fair thing to say, I'm absolutely not anti-Semitic. What he just said, normal people don't say.
Well, and right? I mean, particularly
you are,
when
you have delusions of grandeur and you have forms of narcissistic personality disorder, you would never phrase it that way. You couldn't.
Particularly after someone just said, I know you're not anti-Semitic and there's no one anti-Semitic in your thing. And we know in our community that you have a Jewish grandson. And
actually, Steve's right. Very anti-Semitic. He hates them. Anyways,
the point is you would never, nobody normal would ever say something like that.
No, it's a turn
it, right
of phrase.
Right away tells you this person is clinically ill.
Right. So go back just a little bit so that we get the full gist of, because, all right, go right there. Yeah.
I understand the rest of your question. So here's the story, folks. Number one, I am the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your entire life. Number two, racism. The least racist person. In fact, we did very well relative to other people running as a Republican. Quiet. See, he lied about he was going to get up and ask a very straight, simple question. So, you know.
Quiet.
Welcome to the world of the media. But
welcome,
let me just tell
you
something.
They lie.
That,
pause it. Can I also say that it is a... Folks, it's a tough time when you're living through an era when the least racist person in the world had two consent decrees issued by the Department of Justice for stop having your personnel mark the applications of black people when they're trying to get housing from
just
you.
Just because you want to keep your buildings at a high value doesn't mean you're racist.
A statement and signed it that he his had proof. To tell black people that came to the buildings who were interested in renting that they cost twice as much as they did to get rid of them.
Here's proof that black people, that I'm not racist. More blacks like me than Mitt Romney. Okay, go ahead.
I hate the charge. I find it repulsive. I hate even the question because people that know me, and you heard the Prime Minister, you heard Netanyahu yesterday. Did you hear him, Bibi? He said, I've known Donald Trump for a long time. And then he said, forget it. So you should take that instead of having to get up and ask a very insulting question like that.
We're not excusing you.
I like how he's like pleading now. Like, no, Mr. Trump, I'm not trying to.
I wasn't
ask
trying to.
I
do
was
anything.
Trying to set you up to say that you for you to
I
say you're not
I was told that my question would make you not look anti-Semitic, you schmuck.
I can't even set you up with a softball. You're too stupid to pick up on that.
Oh my
that
god.
That was the easy question. Are you anti-Semitic? Oh, that was supposed to be an easy question.
I know. Incredible.
It was set up, okay? It was set up. He prefaced it by saying, I know you're not anti-Semitic. I know there's no one in your thing, but there is anti-Semitism out there. And the question was going to be, will you please say it's bad? That's
and
basically.
Like, no,
and all Trump had to
you,
say
you
was like, yes, it is bad. It's very unfortunate and we should all get along. And instead, he had to say that he was the least anti-Semitic person and he hates the charge.
That's like the START treaty of domestic questions. How dare you?
Okay. What else to say?
Oh, God. All right.
Bet and not, you know.
Let's go. Let's just start with this is number two. And this is more of Donald Trump's, you know, I guess, dystopian vision of America. And I also want to point out something. I don't think the gold curtains has been a traditional color that presidents speak in front of. But now that seems to be
I asked Matt yesterday just to make sure.
Yeah, like
we got a class like, up
I think
the White
House.
The
first time I thought that, I was like, God, man, I got to get a new TV.
Where are the gold curtains? We need to have a classy operation here.
He's going to come out with a purple cape after this. But here is his dystopian view of America.
We've directed the creation of a task force for reducing violent crime in America, including the horrendous situation, take a look at Chicago and others, taking place right now in our inner cities. Horrible. We've ordered the Department of Homeland Security and Justice to coordinate on a plan to destroy criminal cartels coming into the United States with drugs. We're becoming a drug-infested nation. Drugs are becoming cheaper than candy bars. We're not going to let it happen any longer.
All right, so I can't tell if he's saying we've got to raise the price of drugs to make it a little bit more profitable for the cartels.
My friends in the Gambino's family are having their profit margin squeezed on eight balls, okay?
I mean, of course, there's no, Cliff, there is no data to support what he's saying except for the huge rise in opioid addiction, which is
right.
Not the criminal cartels which are driving this.
No,
although
it's doctors in it, places like
pharma
Appalachia,
companies.
Ohio,
so, I mean, on
Kentucky.
Some level, you could say that. I mean, when a pharmaceutical company dumps in like 400 opioid pills per capita into West Virginia, yes, that is. Maybe way more than that. Yes, maybe I'm understating that. I mean,
no,
that...
There's an article, and I think it was the New York Times, of Clay County, Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And it you know, basically talked about whether 25,000 people in the town or something like that, and there's like 1,100 places where you can get like opioids, OxyContin, or whatever. I mean, we know that, and I'm trying to remember. It's something like that. I could be misremembering it slightly, but. But it's insane, and it's these guys get addicted. You know, they're told by doctors, oh yeah, they, you know, use this, use that. When you go in for pain, you have an operation. They give you this crap, and then you need it more of it, and you get addicted. You can't, and somebody on the street is selling something very similar for in heroin, and so that's what happens. Or there's doctors, kind of like what happened with Rush Limbaugh down in Florida, but this happens in a lot of these places where you can go doctor shopping, and there are doctors who will write prescriptions for this garbage.
But let me be clear about what
medicinal marijuana.
Let me be clear about what happens here. Doctors are marketed these new supposedly innovative opioids, which are designed and specifically approved for the treatment of people who have had acute situations. Maybe the moment you come out of surgery, maybe if you're undergoing certain type of cancer treatments and whatnot. And then what happens is the sales reps get a word that they've got to hit certain quotas, or they're going to hit certain quotas to get certain sales bonuses.
Yep.
And their regional managers give them a wink, wink. Hey, here's a study that says you can use this stuff for that sprained ankle you got. And so then
right.
They start handing these things out in the same way that they used to hand out extra strength Tylenol, essentially. And of course, you're going to get far more addictions. I mean, so that's the fun. And simultaneously, as Donald Trump is up there talking about trying to shut down the cartels that are bringing in this stuff. And like you say, heroin
can
becomes
I say one
a,
more thing,
a cheap
Sam,
substitute.
Which is an important part of this, which is they're also preventing alternatives, which is we still only have half of the states in this country have medicinal marijuana, which is an alternative to opioids that is not addictive. And yet everybody freaks out, oh my God, you're going to legalize that? And they're handing out OxyContin.
Meanwhile, in Congress, as he's speaking, the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte is in there trying to weaken the ability of Americans to sue these drug companies under class action lawsuits for this very practice of off-label
sales. And many of whom quite clearly knew these things, the addictive nature of these. I mean, the tests were showing, I mean, you can find, my wife's done a lot of work on this, so I've seen so much of this, and you can find these pharmaceutical companies putting out videos in the 90s about how OxyContin was not addictive. Wasn't at all. I mean, just flat out lying. They have addicted, you know, God knows how many people they've committed what I think is tantamount to murder, and they've gotten away with it. It's sickening.
All right, let's go to a another moment in the press conference. This is number five, where, you know, Donald Trump, he gets nervous when he hears a British accent.
BBC.
Okay. Here's another beauty.
Uh-oh.
It's a good line. Impartial, free and fair.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. President.
Just like CNN.
On the travel ban... we could banter back and forth. On the travel ban, would you accept that that was a good example of the smooth running of government?
Yeah, I do. I do. Let me tell you about the travel
ban. Were there any mistakes
in that? Wait. I know who you are. Just wait. Let me tell you about the travel ban.
I know who you are.
We had a very smooth
British guy
rollout of the travel ban. But we had a bad court. That's the only thing that was wrong with the travel ban. You had Delta with a massive problem with their computer system at the airports. You had some people that were put out there, brought by very nice buses, and they were put out at various locations. Despite that, the only problem that we had is we had a bad court. We had a court that gave us what I consider to be, with great respect, a very bad decision. Very bad for the safety and security of our country.
Bad. Great decision.
Yeah. Good rollout.
Nobody
bad court.
Nobody vetted this thing. And nobody, the Homeland Security Department didn't see it, and nobody saw this thing. And, like, somebody wrote it up, you know, on the back of a napkin. And that's what became a policy that everybody has sort of laughed out of courts. That's the other alternative.
Here is, now moving on, we have Jim Acosta, who is, you know, in many respects, Donald Trump's, you know, chief nemesis.
That's right.
And
he's the bane to Donald Trump's Batman.
No,
exactly.
Oh, Jim Acosta. Good for you to have come today.
Steve calls the napkin the spick napkin.
All right. Here is Jim Acosta, because Donald Trump is both saying that it's fake news and real leaks. So somehow the leaks that are coming out of the intel agencies are illegal. And we should say that
the leaks are real, but they go through a manufacturing process.
I see.
They have a lot of additives put in, so that by the time they get to the news,
because
they're no longer real.
These leaks are illegal under the way our government treats them. And I think we certainly could use much better whistleblower protections. I think we do have a whistleblower situation here. And in the same way that we did with guys like, you know, Thomas Drake and with Snowden.
And we should have them throughout, not just during Republican presidents. Agreed on that, too.
Indeed. But they can't be both. It can't be both fake, you know, and actionable leaks. And here is Jim Acosta making that point.
Jonathan Carl was asking you about, you said that the leaks are real, but the news is fake. I guess I don't understand. It seems that there's a disconnect there. If the information coming from those leaks is real, then how can the stories be fake?
No, the reporting is fake.
And if look, I just want to ask...
Jim, you know what it is? Here's the thing. The public isn't... You know, they read newspapers, they see television, they watch. They don't know if it's true or false because they're not involved. I'm involved. I've been involved with this stuff all my life. But I'm involved. So I know when you're telling the truth or when you're not. I just see many, many untruthful things. And I'll tell you what else I see. I see tone. You know the word tone.
Tone.
The tone is such hatred.
Hatred.
I'm really not a bad person, by the way. No, but the tone is such... I do get good ratings, you have to admit that. The tone is such hatred. I watched this morning a couple of the networks, and I have to say, Fox and Friends in the morning... They're very honorable people. They're very, not because they're like, good, because they hit me
I
also.
I think honorable people, I think Deucey.
I do something wrong. But they have the most honest morning show. That's all I can say. It's the most honest. But
the tone, Jim, if you look...
Pause it for one second. Let me just, like, understand, when he's talking about the whole... I've done this my whole life. He's talking about the media. Like, he's not... He's so disconnected from what the conversation is about. He has a narrative that is running through his head. I mean, I think I've told this story about a guy who I knew up in Boston, and I hadn't seen him for 2 years. And, like, he walked into a room that I happened to be in and sat down, and it was as if he had picked up a conversation that we were in mid-sentence 2.5 years earlier. I had no idea what he was talking about. And it took, like, a while for me to understand, like, this narrative has just been going through his head. And that's what's going on with Trump here. He just hears one word that he associates with the narrative. He's got like 4 or 5 of them running through his head. I'm not racist. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm getting bad press coverage.
And I'm not a bad guy, which many people who are good people say.
And he proved it by saying he gets good ratings.
Well, apparently it doesn't keep up to 9.
Well, in the end, the ratings are the electoral college total. If you notice, he always goes back to the numbers, even when he's lying about them, because so there's so many levels of stupidity and dishonesty, it's kind of hard to break them all down. But let's say for a second, when he says his electoral vote total was one of the best ever, was actually true and not completely false, and the opposite. I mean, he literally did worse than about 80% of elected presidents on that score. But even if it were true, how does that prove anything about you? It doesn't prove you're a nice guy because you can get high ratings or get elected. All that proves is that, you know, that you fooled enough people. But the connection to him, it's sort of a light into his thinking about everything.
Indeed.
Everything in the world good is based on numbers. Money, number of women you've been with, in his crazy mind, you know, all these are all the things he judges himself by, and that's what makes him good.
All right,
and there's nothing else.
Sometimes somebody gets, well, you look at your show that goes on at 10 o'clock in the evening. You just take a look at that show. That is a constant hit. The panel is almost always exclusive anti-Trump. The good news is he doesn't have good ratings. But the panel is almost exclusive anti-Trump. And the hatred and venom coming from his mouth. The hatred coming from other people on your network. Now, I will say this. I watch it. I see it. I'm amazed by it. And I just think you'd be a lot better off. I honestly do. The public gets it, you know. Look, when I go to rallies, they turn around, they start screaming at CNN. They want to throw their placards at CNN, you know. I think you would do much better by being different. But you just take a look. Take a look at some of your shows in the morning, in the evening. If a guest comes out and says something positive about me, it's brutal. Now, they'll take this news conference. I'm actually having a very good time, okay? But they'll take this news conference. Don't forget, that's the way I won. Remember, I used to give you a news conference every time I made a speech, which was like every day, okay? No, that's how I won. I won with news conference and probably speeches. I certainly didn't win by people listening to you people, that's for sure. But I'm having a good time. Tomorrow, they will say, Donald Trump rants and raves at the press. I'm not ranting and raving. I'm just telling you. You know, you're dishonest people. But I'm not ranting and raving. I love this. I'm having a good time doing it. But tomorrow the headlines are going to be Donald Trump rants and raves. I'm not ranting and raving.
Yes.
I like how also he doesn't think that if he's having a good time, he can't be ranting and raving. He's crazy. Right. He's crazy.
Certain people who like to rant and rave.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. There's so many sort of windows into his thought process, and to show you like where he's so off from how normal people think about these kinds of things, and how it crosses, you know, these things cross people's minds. You know, the ratings and all that stuff is one part of it. You know, the sort of judging everything by that, but yeah, that's another one, right? Which is he gets up and he doesn't understand, right? So the people that are so angry at him. In his view on CNN, places like that, he's got such a lack of empathy for others that in his mind, his demagoguery, if it gets him good numbers, if it gets him elected, is smart, right?
Yes.
It's the right thing to do. It doesn't matter that there's people on the other end of those policies. It doesn't matter that when you call for a Muslim ban, you're calling for, like, why would people hate me for that? I don't know. maybe because you're throwing their families out of the country and preventing them from coming in, and people who also are liberal-minded and have empathy for others are angry because somebody would do something so horrible, but he can't see that.
I think that's exactly also what explains his ability to get up there and say, I'm the least anti-Semitic person you know. Granted, I use it to win, but I don't feel that way. And
right.
I don't,
I'm not really that way, so right. It doesn't matter if I inspire 48 threatened bombings,
right.
You know, at Jewish institutions.
Right.
I mean, he has no culpability for any of that in his mind. He can't.
We did not allow black people into our housing, that was a business decision.
Well, I inspire people to do a lot of things because I'm a great leader. It doesn't mean I want them to do it, but I did inspire them. I think you will admit right. that.
I appointed Ben Carson.
Right.
I mean,
it's an apartment that has urban in its name. I mean, who else would do that? I'm letting the black guy run the urban thing. I took the Sikh and I put her at the UN. I mean, come on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's where he starts to talk about Russia. Is this C or D? Which one? Okay. So there's two parts here. As you know, Cliff, there have been some arguably provocative moves by the Russians. There was a Russian boat that seems to be off the coast of the United States.
It's not far from you guys. Have you seen it?
No. It was up in Groton. I can almost see it from my porch.
Very good show, but, majority report.
Just keep it away from that Statue of Liberty.
Also,
it may be how it happens.
There's been reports that they have broken or continued to be in violation of some missile treaties, whatnot. I mean, stuff that I imagine is not just unique to Russia in terms of testing, like, what can we get away with this new president? And here is Trump addressing this and conflating the idea of we're going to have a new foreign policy in regards to Russia with, for some reason, there's a lot of intrigue involving my staffers around this.
Yes. Mr. President, you mentioned Russia. Let's talk about some serious issues that have come up in the last week that you have had to deal with as President of the United States.
Okay.
You mentioned the spy vessel off the coast of the United States.
Not good.
There was a ballistic missile test that many interpret as
not
a violation
good.
Of
a bomb
between the two countries, and a Russian plane buzzed a U.S. destroyer.
Not good.
I listened to you
during the campaign. When did it happen? It happened when, if you were Putin right now, you would say, hey, we're back to the old games with the United States. There's no way Trump can ever do a deal with us because you have to understand, if I was just brutal on Russia right now, just brutal, people would say, you would say, oh, isn't that wonderful? But I know you well enough. Then you would say, oh, he was too tough. He shouldn't have done that. Look,
I'm just
all
trying
of
to find
the
out
thi-
your
wait
orientation
wait,
to those.
Wait, excuse me, just
I'm
one
just trying to find out
all of those
about
things
it,
that you mentioned are very recent. Because probably Putin assumes that he's not going to be able to make a deal with me because it's politically not popular for me to make a deal. So Hillary Clinton tries a reset. It failed. They all tried. But I'm different than those people. Go ahead.
How are you interpreting those moves, and what do you intend to do about them?
Just
have you
the
given Rex
it.
Tillerson any advice or counsel
I have.
On how to deal?
I what? Have, and I'm so beautifully represented. I'm so honored that the Senate approved him. He's going to be fantastic. I think that I've
is
already...
Is Putin testing you, do you believe, sir?
No, I don't think so. I think Putin probably assumes that he can't make a deal with me anymore because politically it would be unpopular for a politician to make a deal. I can't believe I'm saying I'm a politician, but I guess that's what I am now. Because, oh look, it would be much easier for me to be tough on Russia, but then we're not going to make a deal.
Cogent.
So there
There's
too
it much is. Laughing going on in your studio. People are having way too much fun.
No, I mean, Michael, I think, is going to have a nervous breakdown.
I think
at
it's
some
the best
point
thing
really
I've ever
soon.
Seen.
This is Michael.
Incredible.
This is like how Michael is dealing with his anxiety, I think, like where Donald Trump goes, look, all right, I just launched the nukes. Okay, and I had to because of the question I got from CNN.
You know what? By the way, if Jim Acosta wasn't so rude, then maybe I would have nuked
Kiev. Because that puts me in a bad position where I got to feel like I should just nuke them just to get the people stop getting on my back.
And then he'll do the report like, ooh, Donald Trump shouldn't have
nuked
them.
Donald Trump, let the nukes go. All right, but
now,
wait a second.
Maybe he's
but wait a second.
Can I ask you a question
now?
Quickly?
Can we just
that poll the other day, Sam, they referred to the 39%. I'm trying to remember. That was Pew, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right? So, okay, I want to make sure it's a different, because Gallup just released one that I just see that Joy Reid tweeted out.
and it's almost exactly the same, which has Trump at 38% approval, 56% disapproval. So
fake
I just
polls.
Bring it up because any looking at any one poll, as we know, sometimes it can be wrong. We've now got two that say basically exactly the same thing.
Well,
so in any case, go ahead.
All right, so Trump is talking that he thinks the reason why the Russians have been so testing of him is because of the criticism he's gotten in terms of Russia. I mean, God knows what the relationship is between Donald Trump and Russia, whether he's correct or whether, I mean, who knows? But what is comforting, Cliff, is that Donald Trump understands the implications of this type of potential conflict between the two great nuclear powers in the world. Because remember, you know, Russia still has, what, literally like 1,000 plus, 1,500, I mean,
that's right,
nukes. And so Donald Trump understands the...
In a way that the rest of us do not.
Well, here, let's hear it from him.
Let's hear how
Russia and the United States actually got together and got along. And don't forget, we're a very powerful nuclear country, and so are they. There's no upside. We're a very powerful nuclear country, and so are they. I've been briefed, and I can tell you one thing about a briefing that we're allowed to say because anybody that ever read the most basic book can say it.
Isn't that me?
Nuclear Holocaust would be like no other. They're a very powerful nuclear country, and so are we. If we have a good relationship with Russia, believe me, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
So when you say they're not good.
Okay, so there you have it, folks. Just in case you were wondering, and a lot of debate about the different types of holocausts that you could have.
If you're ranking your holocausts at home, nuclear
is
worse.
The nuclear holocausts will be worse than, I guess, the non-nuclear holocaust.
Hands down.
If you only have a holocaust that's sort of based on, let's say, that Mayan 2012 prediction, it would be a much more pleasant holocaust for you.
Mm. The
just saying, as holocausts go. It's good to know these things. And the thing, the other thing about Trump, somebody, it may have been good old friend Duncan Black, who tweeted something out about, you know, that George W. Bush had this thing too, where he would, you know, when he learned something, he thought that he just learned something that nobody else knew.
Right.
There was a little bit of that to George W. Bush, but Trump, like, that exists like nobody else I've ever seen.
I just heard from a briefing that a right. nuclear holocaust is the worst kind of holocaust.
I mean, it's like total devastation, to quote right. my CIA briefing.
He just learned it in a
briefing. I can say this.
Clearly,
I can say this.
He didn't ever know this.
Because
so
it's
it must
written
be
in public books.
Yeah, that's not classified. You
it's
can, like,
written
find
in public
that.
Books.
Can I ask
nuclear holocaust.
Nuclear
horrible.
Weapons blow shit up.
Can
it's
I ask a really quick question, though? Isn't this similar? Like, didn't Reagan... His hawkishness was balanced by the fact that he had seen some like end of the world movies, and he actually did want to do something about arms control. So when you hear this, I mean, it's crazy, but it's like I prefer when his crazy ramblings are towards I want to do arms deals with Russia versus I want to do something, you know, I want
no,
to attack
well,
somebody.
I would agree with that. It's much better than,
yeah.
You know, I want
so
to
I wonder where
Russia.
He got
Absolutely.
This idea from. Maybe, I mean, because I remember he said that in a debate a year and a half ago. They asked him about the triad, and he's like, well, you got nuclear.
You got three things.
And that's big. And then he panted for a while, but he did convey that he understood it wasn't good.
Right. It's bad. Look.
Blowing shit out of the bed. He saw the Terminator once.
There's three types
where,
of
maybe
holocaust.
That's what it is.
That scene where Linda Hamilton's hanging out at the playground and everybody just gets smoked.
Look, there's, the triad is this. There's three types of holocaust. There's the fake holocaust,
I mean, look,
which is the fake holocaust, which was
Michael
blown up and made into a bigger deal than
there was,
it really was.
There was the one in Germany, which we all know is fake.
Fake.
Okay,
that's
the whole
the
thing's
fake
ridiculous.
One.
All right.
The fake one.
That
friend,
the
really
say,
bad
Richard
ones.
Spencer was telling me that one never happened.
The bad ones, yep. And then the nuclear holocaust, which is like no other.
I mean, it's just like no other because first of all,
it's
real.
So there you go, and but it, we can still talk about the fact that having somebody who either is so disconnected from reality, so ignorant, or both, who I don't know what the answer to that is, you know, who when they learn something that should be they should know is plainly obvious to anybody who's got two brain cells to rub together, they think they've learned something new. It's a bit scary, a bit worrisome.
sure, better than he had his wanting to, you know, nuke Russia to bring about end times. But that you have to trust this guy to sit in a room and negotiate stuff coming from that thought process.
Look, people think I didn't know that Russia had nukes. Why do you think I took 12% of Rosneft? You think I didn't know that?
People act like I don't know how things work. By the way, what do you think just happened over the last week? Pence and Flynn both got effed out of their shares.
Absolutely.
Of Rosneft. And people act like I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm a bad
guy. I've only
guy,
been president for 3.5 weeks and I've already made an extra $2 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not even talking about that, by the way, which is the whole, like, Trump coming out for the one China policy and then China granting him his trademark, which they hadn't done in the past. Magically, what? Now the Trump brand is trademarked in China after he accepted
these the Chinese geostrategists racking their brains like, what can we do with new unpredictable American leader to maintain delicate balance as we rise in Africa? Maybe
bribe?
Bribe? Like, oh, why didn't you say so before? Trump Hotel in Beijing?
Right.
You guys could have Taiwan. You could literally colonize
exactly.
it.
I mean, that's... oh, my. So
I mean, isn't that the sort of funniest thing about being a despotic world leader? Is that sometimes the answer's right in front of your nose. And all
take
this time...
Take them literally. That's like, what Masha Gessen always says.
All this time... we sat here and we're like, how can we curry favor with the United States? The politics are so complicated. Oh, I know. Let's just send Donald Trump a muffin basket full of money.
Let's send him an indirect signal of a satin bathrobe that says best ratings ever.
Unbelievable.
It worked.
Well,
and I'm sure there's all sorts of things we didn't even get a chance to talk about this week.
Mean like... His national security advisor getting fired. We didn't get around to that.
For example, or his national security briefing while sitting in the dining area of Mar-a-Lago looking over North Korean intelligence
right.
and discussing it openly. I mean, there's so much there. But what, I mean, I don't even, you know, I don't
all right.
even begin. So
well, Cliff, wanted to go a little long. Next week we're on vacation, so we will talk to you in 2 weeks. I'm going to finally take a nap and try and get rid of this cold. Which
is that your vacation plan?
That's my plan. Sleeping
solid.
For 2 hours in midday. That is basically it.
All right.
So we will be back in touch with you. I think it'll be the first, like maybe it will be March 3rd by the time we get back.
Wow.
So.
Think of 2 weeks from now, all that can have happened.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I've never...
There is one more thing we should mention.
What's that?
We didn't talk about Flynn, true. We didn't talk about newspapers determining that Trump had constant contacts, or his people, with the Russians while they were hacking into the DNC and everything. Also, a memo was just leaked that showed there was a potential Trump plan for 100,000 National Guard troops to be used... which I would think would be a violation of the Constitution,
yep.
Comitas and all of that, to round up immigrants. So that also broke
the
today.
So-called Constitution.
Right.
We have
very
no
negative.
Time to discuss that because there's other things. So
well,
you know.
Indeed. Scott Pruitt going to be confirmed today.
He's definitely going to make it, right? Because only Collins is against him, and Manchin is going to, of course.
And Heidkamp. Heidi Heitkamp is also going to vote for him.
Heitkamp,
yep.
Sure.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Well, Cliff, have a good one. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, guys. If we're all still alive, 2 weeks it is.
Indeed.
In 2 weeks, I think.
Now, Mike Pence didn't Bye-bye. Know that Steve Bannon burned a cross in the White House. And he went out. He denied it. Now, he knows it now, and I knew it now.
And he knows absolutely nothing about the one on the Obama's new property.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything.
Well, before we go into the fun half, I thought there was a chance we were going to have Judy, but I think she got held up.
Sad.
So we'll have to talk to her when we back. But let's do talk about this story. I think it's important because there's basically two potential. Well, three potential, well, two potential, I think, stories behind this. The AP this morning reported that the Trump administration is considering a proposal to mobilize, like Cliff said, 100,000 National Guards troops to round up unauthorized immigrants, including millions living nowhere near the Mexico border. This was according to a draft memo obtained by the Associated Press. Now, the White House has denied that this proposal was going to be instituted. They sort of said like this. They haven't said that it wasn't a proposal. They think it's possible somebody, you know, had talked about this in the administration.
I would say
the proposal, I should tell you, is 11 pages long. So this is not something that somebody was just like, hey, Bill, could we ever get the National Guards to do
or
this?
Or as an example, hey, Steve.
Right.
Hey, Steve. Yes, Steve.
Now, here's, look.
Jeff.
Here's what it means that this proposal was leaked. It means that the White House wanted to see how much pushback will we get if we do something like this? Let's put a trial balloon out there. Or it means that someone at Department of Homeland Security was like, ooh, this is bad. Maybe what I should do is leak it so that there's pushback and the trial balloon is deflated because it's not put out. I mean, it's one of those two things. It doesn't necessarily mean that that policy was going to be implemented. We've seen other possible policy papers leaked as well. I mean, this happens all the time. But these are the type of things that are being discussed inside this White House. The idea that the National Guard could actually do this legally, I don't know if it could. It's possible the states. I mean, I think you would have to federalize all the National Guard's troops.
It's an emergency.
We've got an emergency. We've got all sorts of drug infestations.
Delta's computers aren't working.
I drew it in crayon on my magic bullet point glitter briefing, and it's very bad. We need to do something. And look, if the blacks have a problem with it, then the black reporter could get me a meeting with the king of the blacks. I would be very happy to meet with him, okay? Because I'm the least racist person.
I'm the least racist person. It would be not a problem.
I'll meet with the head of the Jews. And I did yesterday. The head of the Jews liked me. So, Netanyahu.
Scott Pruitt has been confirmed officially now. The vote, I imagine, was somewhere around 51-52. I haven't quite seen what the vote is, but I imagine by a couple of votes. And, you know, this is just going to be devastating for climate change, for local environments, for the health of thousands upon thousands in this country. It is going to prevent plans to keep our water safe, to keep our air safe. I can assure you, there is not going to be a single policy implemented over the next 4 years which will increase protections for the environment. The agency is called the Environmental Protection Agency, and be rest assured that every official act that is taken by Scott Pruitt and his EPA will be to either roll back environmental protections or to litigate against people who are trying to force the EPA to maintain environmental protections. That's going to be it. So, just one more thing we can add to the pile of when ultimately we make our calculation, I mean, I hope there's some entity out there that's just keeping track of all these things, because there's so many small degradations to our both the process and to the outcomes.
It's dying 2020.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look.
It's coming.
I don't know. If you're too stupid to recognize that this is bad for everyone, and that the thing that mitigates it is that there are people marching wearing pussycat hats, doesn't outweigh it. I mean, I'm glad that we have people who are willing to get active and involved. And I hope that Democrats can take the House or the Senate in 2018 or in 2020 and win the presidency. But those, I mean, devastating. All right, we're going to take a break. Head to the fun half, where you will be able to hear Chris Christie talk about how Donald Trump emasculated him once again. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah, folks. So for listeners of the free show, again, we'll be on vacation next week. All new material. Check it out. You will enjoy it. We have some very interesting interviews lined up. It is your support that makes this show possible. And by becoming a member, it will cost you a couple of dimes, a couple of nickels a day. And we say thank you by giving you, almost on a daily basis, an extra hour, 90 minutes of free material, commercial-free. So become a member today. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. And if you buy crap from Amazon or Jet.com, do so through our link at Majority Report Kick, MajorityReportKickback.com. Also, folks, I forgot to mention, April 8th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I believe it is, we will be doing our first live Majority Report, I think, since like 2005 or 4. It'll be with Janine Garofalo, Matt Taibbi. I mean, right now, that's who's booked. I mean, who knows who else could show up?
Maybe. You'll never fucking know.
Yeah, right.
He's not invited.
F you.
So you can buy tickets at the Bell House, New York. The venue is in Brooklyn. It's thebellhouseny.com. Check it out there. We'll put a link at the Majority. Tickets are selling rather quickly. We've only mentioned it once or twice on this show, and already we're about a third of the tickets are already gone. So it's possible, after we mention on a Friday show, that another, like, two-thirds of the tickets will be gone by Sunday. And we're still a month off. So go get your ticket today. And then we're going to probably do meetups. It'll probably be separate meetups for all four of
that's
us.
That's correct.
Here. That's we don't correct. Feel comfortable doing the meetups together, but they'll probably be separate meetups.
We don't mingle.
Maybe separate. We're not quite sure where, but it'll
be the
in
Nixon
the
listening
vicinity.
Corner with Matt.
That's right. Matt's going to be there. I think you're going to go to your own meetup, Kelly. No. Kelly's going to have her own meetup.
And we'll everyone see. From the YouTube chat right. room is invited.
YouTube
to that
only.
One. YouTube exclusive.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half. 646-257-3920. You can IM the show. And we got a couple more sound clips. We'll take some phone calls. We'll
really,
we
actually do have more sound clips. It's ridiculous. Jew.
Gorka.
Gorka Jew.
How dare you call me an Nazi?
Very Jew of you.
The doctor is in. Be right back.